So the buzzword in Ingram or buzz sentence is a defendant should not be allowed to lie behind a log and ambush a plaintiff with unexpected defenses, which again was Rule 8. We then move on to care and candor, which is governed under Rule 11, which basically states that an attorney, an unrepresented party, certifies that to the best of the person's knowledge, information, and belief, they formed an inquiry reasonable under the circumstances. The party cannot bring a claim unless there's a basis in law and fact that is not frivolous, which includes a good faith argument. So just keep in mind that it needs to be a good faith, not frivolous argument. And in the case where the attorney's argument is not warranted by existing law, the attorney should acknowledge to the court existence of adverse authority and argue for the change in the law. We then move on to amending pleading, which is governed by Rule 15. Amended pleadings, you can amend a pleading before the statute of limitations and after the statute of limitations as to the claims or the parties. And there's amendments without leave of court, which is Rule 15A1. You can only do it once within 21 days after serving it, or if the original pleading is one to which a responsive pleading is required, such as a counterclaim or cross-claim, is 21 days after service of a responsive pleading or 21 days after service of Rule 12B, E, or F motion, whichever one is earlier. Rule 15A3 also states that any required response to an amended pleading must be made within the time remaining to respond to the original pleading or 14 days after service of an amended pleading, whichever one is later. Then there's amendments with leave of court, which is Rule 15A2. A party may amend its pleading only with the opposing party's written consent or the court's leave. Now, there are factors to this which this court looks at, which they look at what stage of litigation they're on, if there's prejudice to the defendant, an undue delay, or whether if it was in good or bad faith. We then move on to Rule 15C, relation back. When the statute of limitations has expired, relation back may save an amended claim if it's related back to the original claim, or otherwise arises out of. If the added claim does not relate back to under Rule 15C, then it would be futile because the statute of limitations has expired on the added claim. Therefore, the court should deny the motion to amend. We then go on to amending claims or defenses after the statute of limitations. The case in this section was Moore v. Baker. Here, the amended claim or defense arose out of the conduct, transaction, or occurrence set out in the original pleading. The rule was, even if a new claim relates from some of the same transaction as the original claim, the court may deny the motion to amend for the same reason a court may deny a discretionary motion to amend under Rule 15A. Then go on to amending parties after the statute of limitations, which is Rule 15C1C. Only if Rule 15C1B, which is arises out of the same transaction, is satisfied, then you move on to using Rule 15C1C. So you first have to satisfy that the claim arises out of the same transaction. You then look to see if it's within the period provided by Rule 4M for servicing the summons and complaint. Here, the party must have received such notice of the action that will not be prejudiced when defending on the merits, and knew or should have known that the action would have been brought against it. The issue again is if it relates back, and the party which you bring in must have had notice 121 days after the complaint is filed that it could be sued under this rule. The case here was Krupski v. Costa Crossier, and Krupski knew or should have known that it would have named Costa Crossier as a defendant, but for an error. The rules here are 15A and 15C. You then move on to joinder of claims and parties. This is under Rule 18A, which states a permissive claim joinder. Basically, a plaintiff can include any unrelated actions to a defendant. The procedure, Rule 18A, you can join, basically what I said, all claims to an opposing party, even if unrelated. The rule applies to all parties, not just plaintiffs. So it can be one plaintiff to two defendants or two plaintiffs to one defendant. And that rule is where there's parties 20A1 and 20A2, which is party joinder. Joinder of parties under Rule 20A, it arises out of the same transaction or occurrence, and there is a common issue of fact or law, and it's in order to promote convenience and efficiency. Now, you have to keep in mind that personal jurisdiction and subject matter jurisdiction must be covered independently. It still allows pursuit of different remedies. Now, joinder of counterclaims under Rule 13A and 13B, we first look at compulsory counterclaims. The procedure is 13A. Compulsory, the claim arises out of the subject matter of opposing party's claim. And in compulsory counterclaims, you have to bring it or you lose it. Then there's permissive counterclaims, which is 13B, where you can join all claims against an opposing party, even if they're unrelated. And again, that's permissive. The case in this section was Leindecker v. Asian Women United. This is the one where she was part of the old board and the new board, and the old board argued that Leindecker's claims in the second suit were compulsory claims that she waived by not asserting them as compulsory in the first suit. The rule is that claims must be ripe at the time of answer. So you can't bring them up later if they haven't ripe. All right, we then move on to cross claims against co-parties under Rule 13G. Here the plaintiff sues Defendant 1 and Defendant 2 under Rule 20A, then Defendant 1 sues Defendant 2. The procedure in Rule 13G states that it must arise out of the same transaction or occurrence. It doesn't help until after a valid cross-claim has been brought. All right, joinder by defending parties and pleader claims under Rule 14. The procedure of Rule 14 is allowed only when a third-party defendant may be liable to a defendant for all or part of the plaintiff's claim against the defendant as contribution or indemnification. Rule 13H permits the addition of a party when asserting cross-claim or counterclaim. A third-party defendant, otherwise known as an impleader, may be impleaded if the defendant party is a third party and may be liable for all or part of the claim against the defending party. Most often this happens where there was contribution. The third party contributed to the injury, indemnification, where the third party agreed to reimburse the defendant for a liability. And the impleader is permissive, and therefore the court has discretion to allow it. We then move on to supplemental jurisdiction in federal courts. Here you have to keep in mind the buzzword you want to use. It's common nucleus of common facts. Again, this is to the court's discretion. The test which evolves for supplemental jurisdiction, the federal claim must be substantial. Supplemental jurisdiction is discretionary depending on jury confusion, if the state issue predominates in proof, scope, comprehensiveness of remedy, so on and so forth. If the federal claim is dismissed, the state law claim will also be dismissed under supplemental jurisdiction. If issues of keep in mind that federal rules allow joinder of claims but do not automatically create jurisdiction. This is what supplemental jurisdiction does. The court is asserting that it is going to supplement and take on the jurisdiction, but again, it's up to the court's discretion. Cross claims and counterclaims are not logically dependent on the main claim. A cross claim, for example, need only to arise from the same transaction or occurrence.